Welcome to David Maister's Business Masterclass, a series of advanced business seminars exploring principles and practices for success in professional businesses.
Hello, I'm David Maister. In this seminar, entitled Values in Action, I will discuss the courage that it takes to actually live by the values you say you believe in. As we shall see, more than the right choice of products, services, or markets, strategic success is about living up to your values. Most companies have a mission and values statement, all of which stress client service, teamwork, the goals of being the best place to work. They're truly inspirational, and if implemented, would certainly lead to business success. However, what many companies misunderstand is that their standards or values are not defined by their aspirations, we aim to be excellent, but your values are what you are prepared to enforce. Something cannot be called a value with you or a principle if you're allowed to transgress it with no consequences. Your company can be said to have values to the extent that there are clear, non-negotiable minimum standards of behavior that the company will tolerate. In particular, whether or not your values are operational, i.e. actually influencing what is going on in your company, is crucially determined by whether or not there are consequences for non-compliance. Consider the following example. One company with a strong teamwork culture had a senior professional whose recent book had received much public attention. Because of this public profile, the professional was bringing in significant revenues for the company, but he was operating in ways that was countercultural to the company's teamwork approach. Among other things, he was building his own internal empire and refusing to share his leads with other professionals. He was also beginning to build up his cadre of his juniors who were loyal to him, rather than involving other junior staff who could have, in the view of management, benefited from being exposed to the kinds of work he was bringing in. Despite much discussion between management and this professional about the company's policies of collaboration and sharing, his behavior continued. Others in the company, aware of his success, were beginning to ask themselves and management, is that what I have to do now to succeed? Does cash trump our philosophies? Does cash trump our culture? Can I also get away with ignoring the company's traditional approaches as long as I bring in lots of businesses? The level of collaboration and teamwork in the company was markedly on the decline. Now, the company at this point faced a tough choice. It had to decide what was more important, the professional's book of business or the benefits that came from actually living the company's culture and values. It was increasingly clear that it could not have both. If management of this company was seen to tolerate the adverse behavior of this one successful professional, then they would lose all credibility in trying to nurture and collaboration elsewhere in the company. Everyone else would get permission to behave in the same way. A decision had to be made. Did they really believe that the teamwork approach was right for them? Did they really believe that it would lead to commercial strategic success? Or should they be less idealistic and more pragmatic? It was a real debate. Should they look the other way and gladly accept the revenue stream from this rogue elephant? After much contemplation, they decided to stick with their culture, and they asked the professional to leave, their biggest revenue generator. As it turned out, the company continued to flourish mightily, as, by the way, so did the professional in his own company. It turns out for this company that for their market segment, they were right. Collaboration and teamwork was something that their marketplace actually did reward, and they made the right choice in continuing to be a firm that could actually deliver it. The point of the story is that there aren't many companies with the courage to do what this company did, incur a short-term income loss in order to bet on the long-run benefits of sustaining their values. In most companies, an economically productive person would rarely, if ever, be confronted about softer values issues. As a result, very few companies actually have real, operable values. They say they do, but few of the professionals really believe that the company is serious. Much more common is the following situation. At a meeting, I was trying to make the economic case for enforcing the basic of good project supervision. Everyone present agreed that if all the professionals did this diligently, the company would achieve higher quality, eliminate inefficiencies, have more motivated juniors, and as a result, make more money. Yet most of the senior officers in that room felt that their company's performance in this area was only adequate, not excellent. Despite the recognition of the financial benefits of achieving excellence in this area, these senior officers felt that they had no ability, or in some cases desire, to mandate standards in this area, and certainly no power to enforce them. Behavior in this area, how well individual people supervise the juniors, was a matter of individual professional discretion in those companies. As long as the professional stayed out of trouble in supervising, no real excellence was demanded of them. The prevailing attitude when it came to supervising younger professionals seemed to be, good enough is good enough. Thus, the benefits that would flow from true excellence were never captured. Note that in this case, the issue is not one of people doing bad things. Most companies would tackle someone who was atrocious at supervision or engaged in indecency or harassment. Rather, the issue is one of tolerance. In most companies, the operating principle is, as long as you're not causing high-profile problems, you are left alone. What's missing is any credible management behavior that proves that the company has high standards, real values, real non-negotiable principles. Also note that no one in any of these situations I'm describing disagrees with the values or with their benefits. The fight is about whether or not the company or its management have the power, the desire, the appetite, or the willingness to police the standard. Sadly, most companies don't. There are no consequences for non-compliance. A similar issue exists in the area of customer service. I recently interviewed a number of corporate clients about what they thought about the client feedback systems that many professional businesses have adopted. The customer said, "You know, if these firms were serious about improving quality, we were willing to participate with their customer feedback systems. So we filled in the forms and waited to see what would happen. And guess what happened? Nothing. We told the companies what could be improved, and they didn't change. We always suspected that these companies weren't really committed to quality. Now we have the proof." Why didn't the companies change? Because most companies do okay on these client or customer satisfaction surveys. That's why they're still in business. But by settling for okay as an acceptable response, these companies are, implicitly or explicitly, operating on the principle of good enough is good enough. As long as the clients or customers are not positively unhappy, the company doesn't need to change. It has proven immensely difficult to get whole companies to go beyond this and genuinely strive for "you're terrific." The missing element in the system is managerial courage. If a client or customer gives the company an okay score, the professional involved rarely hears from management. No one ever comes around to ask, "How could we have done better? Let's go to the client together and talk about what we could have done to get an improved score." Professionals quickly learn that in the eyes of management, okay is acceptable. Management does not demonstrate by its actions the true commitment to excellence that it preaches when it launched its client feedback program. What is clearly needed and is mostly missing is what Tom Peters called a passion for excellence. What I keep on discovering is that while I meet many individual professionals with such a passion, I rarely meet people who believe that their whole company as an institution is built on such principles. People agree to strive for excellence, but they rarely agree to be held strictly accountable for it. Some professionals I've met are exceedingly noble when it comes to dealing with client or customers, but treat junior professionals, staff, and sometimes other professionals like dirt. These are the ones I worry about most. Because of their effectiveness with clients, the company tolerates the professional's bad behavior in other areas, and their bad example causes a decay of internal ethics throughout the company. This decay is all the more regrettable because there is a wonderful paradox about professionalism. The noble path wins. The more you act selflessly and give clients honest advice, even when it may be counter to your own interests, the more trust you earn and the more future business you get. When trying to sell, the more you focus on trying to help rather than tooting your own horn, the more likely you are to win the sale. The more you treat younger professionals and staff with respect and invest the time to supervise them well, the more you are repaid with energy, loyalty, and not coincidentally, with superior quality and productivity. The more you do favors for your colleagues, the more likely they are to subsequently help you and support you in your business. What is fascinating is that this simple point of taking the noble path seems to need stressing. Doing the right professional thing is not just a moral point. It can be shown that it's good business. If this is true, why don't more people get it? I meet more professionals who are cynics about clients, about associates or juniors, about collaboration, than I meet professionals who truly act as if they believe that doing the right thing is beneficial. Which brings us back to the importance of the company. It's hard to sustain the faith and commitment to excellence if one is the only one doing it. It is easier if you're part of a community of true believers, all committed to practicing the same values. In fact, one could argue that it is only by having a common purpose backed up with rigidly enforced shared values that a company can define itself. Without such common purpose and values, a company becomes nothing more than a convenience for people to share space, support services, and name. What would it mean to have real values? It means much more than articulating desired beliefs. A company will have functioning values only to the extent that it has an effective management system that is intolerant about deviations from these values. Most companies have a catechism or creed that says to be one of us, to be a member of this company, there are certain ways of behaving to which you must subscribe. And it usually includes all the usual topics, including collaborative behavior, dealing with clients and juniors, and so on. However, what companies also need, and mostly do not have, is a method to enforce these rules of membership in the family. Enforcement would require two things. First, management must have a method of identifying departures from excellence. Again, I must stress that only being aware of problems is not the issue. This information can be obtained either through formal measures, such as client feedback systems, or through active hands-on management by wandering around. The informal approach is less bureaucratic, but requires much more managerial time. The second thing that is needed to enforce values is yet more management time devoted to closed-door counseling and coaching discussions with those who depart from the company's values. The ability to drop by and say, "Fred, it wasn't excellent this time. How can I help you?" Professionals must know that if they fail to achieve excellence and settle for okay, they can expect to see the managing officer privately in their office saying, "Come on, old chap, bad show, not the way we do things around here, don't you know?" Notice that this visit is not about compensation or formal performance appraisal. It's about what is and is not acceptable behavior in the club. Unfortunately, in most companies today, there are very few non-financial things that would call the managing officer to drop by. The range of tolerated behaviors is very broad. It's worth noting a paradox about values and the role of management. When a value system is already entrenched and broadly shared amongst the company's members, managers need do little to sustain it because everyone knows and adheres to how we do things around here. They also know that deviations will elicit a response. Little management time is required to sustain an effective value system. However, where the shared value system is weak or non-existent, it requires more time, significant management time and effort to build up the agreement among the professionals that strict accountability systems should be introduced to keep everybody honest if you are to achieve excellence. Finally, I must report one fascinating result from my work. When I've had the opportunity to use voting machines, anonymous voting machines, and ask the assembled members of the company if they would support this place becoming less tolerant on departures from excellence, including a detailed description of what this would mean for their daily lives, the overwhelming majority vote yes. There seems to be a hunger for companies to stand for something and to have enforced values. People want to have meaningful lives and belong to companies that have real meaningful purposes. Yet many managing officers I meet tend to say, "Ooh, we can't afford to be less tolerant. We'd lose too many people." Most professionals I meet seem to want to belong to a company with real values. Few seem to think their company will ever get there. The good news is there is an increasing recognition that real professionalism is both desirable and, in the long run, profitable. Perhaps what company managers must consider is that their biggest business problem may be that they're not professional enough. This concludes Values in Action, the fifth episode in my 14-part series, Strategy in Professional Businesses. Upcoming seminars in the series will focus on creating an adaptive firm, how companies should add value, and how to think about mergers, geographic expansion, and diversification. Today's seminar was based on a chapter in my book, True Professionalism, details of which can be found on my website at davidmaester.com. This podcast series is now available for purchase, both as a single episode and as part of a DVD set, from my website, davidmaester.com/store, STORE. I'm also pleased to announce that my forthcoming book, Strategy and the Fat Smoker, is available for pre-order from this same location.